And good evening, everybody. It's Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. And I'm here with Kyle.
Check.
And out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly, Gila, and Alex.
Yes. Hello. All of the above.
Hello.
All right. Well, that's a lively discussion, don't you think?
It was, yes.
Yeah, now and, you can't come back, Alex. You can't come back now. You have to stay there.
Yeah, I hope that's not the case. I do want to come back, so, you know, shockingly. Yeah, I would. I think, you know, I still think our country is pretty great. But I also think, and to bring the discussion back to hacker culture and things, I think this contrarian viewpoint and taking the long view of things and understanding what's happening, the system, the vulnerabilities, and being able to shout out those the vulnerabilities of this particular system from the rooftop, from someplace like WBAI, literally rooftops of Manhattan here, is an example of why the hacker mindset right now is a necessary civic virtue. I think we need to have these types of discussions. We need to be able to deconstruct what's happening here from the perspective and the framework of looking at this as a system, in much in the same way that a hacker would dissect any type of technological system mm-hmm. that has vulnerabilities. And I think that's what we're doing. And I think that's I'm trying to preempt some of the criticism I'm sure that we'll face because of the politics of it all.
Well, I mean, that's absurd because what are you supposed to do? Just not, you know, pretend things aren't happening and just go about your business as if everything is fine. That is unhealthy. And we will never do that. We never have done that. And I dare say most people in our community are, you know, paying attention. I sure hope so. Because we have such skill, such promise, such, you know, potential of actually making significant changes. I mean, you know, there are so many people in the tech industry right now who have such power. And unfortunately, many of them have been corrupted. And they're using that power for not the best things. But that doesn't mean that's the final chapter. It doesn't mean somebody can't come along and do something better and fix all their mistakes. You have to believe that. If you stop believing that, then what's the point? You might as well just give up and let the oligarchs and dictators rule everything. You know, there are people who are good with that. You know, that they know what they're doing. And they basically are okay with it. And that's sad. Rob.
Yeah. That's an important point to make, is that you always hear when having these discussions with anyone, there's always someone who is like, well, I don't get involved. I don't like, I'm not a political person. I don't want to get into all of that. And that attitude in itself is taking a side. It's a very loud taking a side. It's taking the side that, yeah, everything you're seeing around you is fine and you're okay with that. And you're not looking to make any changes or, you know, even consider the fact that we maybe don't have everything right and could be doing something better. So yeah, it's, you know, we've all got a point of view on the world around us. We have our, you know, our what we see and hear and learn and experience that all adds to our understanding of the way things are. And with an understanding of the way things are, is a way, you know, kind of the part of your mind that thinks, is this the way things ought to be? Is this, you know, is there a better way? And particularly in the hacker community, I think we are generally clever enough to say, yeah, there's things we could be doing better. Here's how we're going to figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's, I'm not a political person either. That might surprise you, but I don't consider myself to be a political person. I'm not running for politics. I don't get involved in politics. You know, I try to stay away from long meetings and, you know, all these just torturous sessions of dotting I's and crossing T's and all that kind of thing. I'm a person. I'm a civilian who's paying attention to what's going on around me. And politicians tend to be involved in that because they're the ones that are dictating policy. So, yeah, I've got an opinion on that. Doesn't make me political. it just makes me aware and, you know, somebody who cares. And I dare say that's what most people are. So by condemning the conversation as political, you're basically telling people, shut up, let the politicians do everything, and we just watch the ball game, you know. Oh, by the way, are the Knicks playing tonight, or was that just last night? What, nobody knows? Okay, great, thank you.
I don't follow tennis.
Thanks for nothing. All right.
I'm curious what people are doing.
Barking up the wrong tree there.
I'm curious what people are doing. You know, I guess all in from all sort of points of view, but in general, like, what are you doing in light of things that are going on, technologically speaking, with the advances that are coming along? Are you retraining? Are you out of a job? Are you thinking about what your life might be like in the next 5-10 years? Are you thinking that you're gonna have to like learn new tech? Like, are there technology, like new technologies? Are there older things that your older skills that you're thinking about? Or are you doing kind of both? Like, kind of familiarizing yourself with newer things and also looking at some kind of lower tech ways of incorporating activity or information and skills and things you can do to organize into your life. I'm open to ideas. I really am curious because we say a lot that I think people feel like paralyzed or something. Mm-hmm. And I think it's in response to things that generally when you hear a news story or a political story, like you don't really have a huge like bit to say about it as a citizen. That's why we elect people to go to those meetings.
Right.
So it can be kind of jarring. You're like, okay, well, what do? I have to go and like run 10,000 errands and stuff. So like that can be a stilted sort of conversation on average. But when it starts becoming about like, well, just disruptive to day-to-day life, that's the stuff that people start saying like, wow, something's off and maybe I should like adjust, because we're very adaptive. We're very we have a lot of ingenuity. We are innovative. We can adjust to even extraordinary situations.
But what does it take to have that confidence to be able to say that we have this ability, we have this power? Because a lot of people are programmed to just stop believing in their own abilities and to simply follow instructions and do what the boss tells them.
I think there's a lot of nihilism. Mm-hmm. That's I think a term that is underutilized in this moment, I think, from all generations. But maybe there's other terms that illustrate or describe that, but it is strength and power in numbers. And,
well, I got to tell you, you know,
everything you do helps.
Being here once a week talking with you guys about these things, I feel better afterwards. I feel, you know, somewhat empowered. I feel like there is a chance. I just feel good expressing myself and hearing what other people have to say as well. And I think everybody needs to do that to a degree. And everybody has opinions. Everybody has perspectives. Share yours. Learn from others. You know, write things. Talk to people. It does help. And it will lead to ideas. It will lead to change. You know, we're not just sitting around complaining. We're actually trying to think of different ways of doing things, solutions that work, ways of bringing people together. That's all so essential, but you have to do it.
Yeah, it's a sort of critical analysis of the day and age, and we're questioning the reality that we're experiencing and comparing it to what other people's perception of that reality is. And I think ultimately, like, we may get mired down in so many stacks of articles you bring to the show and preparing. Like, we're really steeped in it sometimes, but I have noticed, I mean, the cultural mood around some of this, mm-hmm. the art, the music, the kind of general consensus about what these technology companies are or what using phones does to you. I think that is really, really encouraging because, and I mean, we're just a part of the conversation, but I really have noticed that on average, everybody is aware of this stuff. I was watching TV, Euronews had a highlight of an art installation, and they had those robotic dogs, but they had like lifelike heads of like all the tech companies, and they were like milling around like in a dog park. It was hilarious. But like art and the ridicule, the people taking some of the punches, like we talked about earlier, the comedians or other people in the public eye of other, you know, higher or let's say elevated stature, people with a platform, they are all a part of that awareness, because people that are busy day to day that don't really pay attention, they catch wind of stuff like that, or they hear people laughing about something. It is a way of spreading a sort of awareness and getting, keeping the cultural attitude up to date.
Right.
And there's so much when, you know, you have complicated technologies or things that really are hard to explain, when you have people interpreting it and riffing on it, laughing about it, or, you know, talking about it in different ways, it can take on forms that people really do understand, and it empowers them. They understand when things are dangerous because they identify with a way someone characterized it or a story they told about it or something like that. And I think that's really easy to forget when you're paying attention to a lot of the negative stories, or you're looking at people's critiques of how you talk about things. Okay, well, other people talk about things in other ways.
Yeah, too, yeah. So you can't fixate on that. But I just feel really good whenever I see, you know, some act of dissidence or just rebellion from somebody in the media, whether, you know, it's a talk show host or a comedian. You know, these are ways of knowing that you're not alone and hearing different perspectives and laughing at the absurdity of it all. Because, you know, if we stop laughing, we've lost, and we must never do that. We always have to, you know, maintain positivity, because that brings more people to our side and people who will be with us that will be sharing the experience and the stories and the ideas. So, you know, don't give up on people. Don't give up on yourself. There is so much potential here. And this is the time. You know, it might feel hopeless. It might feel crazy. But I think that's just the universe's way of saying, get off your ass now, because there's never going to be a better time. And, you know, be on the right side of history, and people will talk about it for hundreds of years. What do you guys think out there in Signal Land?
I think that's a solid outlook. I mean, it is so easy to just get depressed and get lethargic and feel like there's, you know, feel overwhelmed. And, you know, I've been listening to this program for, I don't know, about 100 years. I've been involved with it for at least a portion of 100 years. And we've been through administrations of all kinds. You know, there was the Trumps, but there was Biden, there was Bush Senior, there was Bush Junior, Obama, Clinton, you know, things on both sides, things where different groups were more or less in control. And there are always things that can be improved. Even if you're on one or other of the political sides or teams or wings or whatever however you want to think about it, there are things that your side is doing wrong that, you know, could be done better. And it is so easy to just get mired in all the crap and all the absolute filth that's you know, going on in the world. And, you know, people get radicalized when they end up just like watching nothing but Fox News, or, you know, reading Murdoch newspapers or things like that. And it's really important to like just go outside, connect with humans, see what's actually going on out there, rather than, I guess, just offloading the responsibility of being a human in our society to whatever your favorite person on TV says that you should be thinking at that point, or as we're seeing more and more, whatever a robot chatbot somewhere thinks you should be thinking at that moment.
Yeah, you know, I agree with just about all of that, Rob. It's It's vitally important, you know, to have a critical eye towards the things you stand for as well. But I cannot stand people who insist on both siding everything. You know what I mean? We're basically, yeah. Oh, they're all evil and they do the same thing. And they're just, no, they're not just as bad. Sure. You can point to hypocrisy. You can point to faults and failures, but you have to be able to realize that, you know, one group of people is doing pure evil and the other group of people, mm-hmm. it might be more on the incompetent side or whatever, but they're not, not the same. They're
the
not
whatever.
The same.
Yeah. It's that some things just do not compare.
No. I mean, yeah,
I agree with that.
Were living through all kinds of frustration. I've protested against every administration, you know, since I was a toddler. I can tell you they all have their faults, but nothing has ever been like this. And what's funny is, you know, I said that under Bush the second, because nothing was ever like that either. The guy was incompetent. Do we remember that? He was mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you know, this far surpasses that. And, you know, I don't know if this is a trend or it's just going to get crazier and crazier. I don't see how you can get crazier than this, but yeah, sure. I guess you could, you know, Kim Il-sung could come back to life or I don't know. There's all kinds of possibilities, I suppose. Rob.
Yeah, I wasn't looking to both sides anything, but I do think that the very problems of people just offloading responsibility and thinking, oh, I'm just going to be on this side and just automatically think whatever that side is doing is great. That's what led to what we have now. That's what led to a chintzy reality TV dude being in charge of the country, because it's just this idea that, you know, it doesn't matter who's up there as long as they've got the same letter after your name, after their name, than you do at the voting booth. And so it all bears examination. It all bears questioning. There is definitely one side right now that is far more evil than the other. If fighting that huge evil means, supporting the biggest opponent they have, maybe that's something to think about. But it's really, you know, we have to think. We have to use our brains, and we're meant to be good at that in this community.
But I think that's also a part of the issue, mm-hmm. is that so many things that are being consolidated, like when venture capitalists wind up owning newspapers, mm-hmm. and then the newspapers close down. And I'm sorry, since the merger, how many companies own like 2/3 of the?
It's a very depressing number.
Yeah.
Television stations.
It's impossible to keep track of. It changes by the minute.
And because so much information is coming from so few places, and it then becomes incumbent upon us to make sure we're hearing as much as we can from disparate voices and truth-telling voices, impartial voices if those exist. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Emmanuel, it kind of puts me in mind of some of the stuff you wind up saying about some of the balkanization of social media. Is there fewer and fewer places to go for one-stop shopping in so many different areas that social media has become and news has become and I realize it's an audio medium and nobody can see what I'm doing with my hands except Rob. But the way that so many things have become compressed and have become fire hosed, I think, has succeeded in echo chambering us into so many places and kettling us into so many places. And I was reading something about...
I'm not quite sure how to help you.
No one was talking to you. No one was talking to you.
Oh, my God. How many times has that happened?
Out of a bitch.
More than you'd think.
No.
But the one of my cousins said something on social media earlier. She posted just 8647,
mm-hmm.
and the idea that so many people have been kettled into violence or kettled into preparation for violence, mm-hmm. I think, and Saturday night. We're on YouTube now, so we can say it was a setup, right? It was a total setup.
Well, I mean, they're playing it that way, but it happened. I mean, you know, there are lunatics out there. There's no question about that. Thing that's interesting, the guy rode a train across country, and that means since we've ridden trains many times across the country, you know, if you go to the dining room, you sit with somebody. Somebody probably hung out with this guy. Somebody probably had a conversation with him, or maybe he was sitting in the passenger car and you sat next to him for 2 days. You know, you learn something about people that way, and I haven't heard that perspective. But no, I think it's real. It's just, you know, for a moment, a brief moment, and I'm ashamed to even say this because it makes me feel naive, but Trump actually seemed to be handling it well, you know. And that first part of the 60 Minutes interview, I don't know if you guys have seen this, he was you know, talking to the reporter and being rational and human. And then as soon as she read part of his manifesto that referred to a pedophile and he assumed it was him, he just completely lost it and turned into the ugly person that we see, you know, far more often than any of us want to see. And I realized, you know, no, he learned nothing from this. It's not going to bridge any gaps. It's not going to be any kind of, you know, bringing us together type of a thing. It's going to be used by this administration against their enemies. That is exactly what has happened. And it's only Wednesday. They are coming after. If your phone number ends in 8647, I would try to change it now because, yeah, who knows what they're going to think.
What about 8645? Do you think they'd retroactively have an issue with that, too?
You know, they should. They should. But
speaking of 4-5, by the way. Greetings to the 45 people who are currently with us
nice.
On the live stream. Very
well done.
How was that for a segue, huh?
Nice.
Pretty good, pretty good.
Like, yeah. I'm a radio broadcaster or something. Yeah. Nope, now it's 46. So, yeah, chat is interesting. And
can I just say, you know, talking about building better systems and the balkanization of social media and all that, we have been getting all kinds of submissions at Hope for talks, and many people are addressing these very issues, and they have solutions. They have things they're working on. They have ideas. And I am just so blown away by that. Now, tomorrow is the early deadline. What that means is April 30th, the talks that get submitted by that time, they get first crack at the schedule. And we'll be accepting talks for a while after that, but those are the ones that we're going to look at. And if it's a really good talk, there's no way that it's not going to get scheduled because it was submitted before the early deadline. So if you have an idea for a talk, tomorrow is the last day you can do that and be part of early submission. You can still submit afterwards, but you might have more competition. We have had so much in the way of really, really good submissions, as we always do, but it makes me feel good just looking at them come in. It's going to be an amazing event when they're all presented, whether you're attending online or in person. It's something that I think is so important for our community, is to share our knowledge and come together and realize that we're not alone. Oh, and the info to get all that information, hope.net, including how to get tickets and stuff like that.
Excellent. Happening at the New Yorker Hotel in beautiful downtown Manhattan.
That's right. It's in New York. Town. Hence the name, the New Yorker Hotel, where Nikola Tesla lived and died. So there'll be more to say about that. All right. Shall we take phone calls?
I am ready.
That's a great idea.
All right. Well, who would like to give out the phone number? And as soon as you say the last digit, the phone number will become alive. Hopefully.
Okay. Well, you can give us a call at United States phone number 802-321-4225.
And the phone line is now active. And again, that is country code 1 if you're out of the country. 802-321-4225.
And through the good offices and skill of our friend Kyle, if you are a visual type person, you can also see it on the screen right now.
Yeah, I put the number up for us to share on the video stream.
And I'm waiting to hear the phone ring. Last week we had significant trouble with the phone, but I think we solved all that. And I do hear the phone ringing, so that's a good sign.
All right.
Okay, and thank you for moving the caller ID box over to me, Kyle, because I know who this is. Hi, Rebel, how are you?
Hi, I'm Hi, Emmanuel.
Hello. How are you? It's a joy to hear your voice.
Yes. Okay. I just was. I have a question about Clipboard, but before I get to that, I noticed that I've been getting a lot of text messages from phone numbers and like WhatsApp messages from phone numbers, regular phone numbers, area code phone number, and they're like, you know, these scam texts, you know, like, would you like to invest in this? And you know, it's from like overseas. I see videos about these overseas people. Then you know, these texts that say these promotional texts that say like political ads and stuff. How do they're taking up all these phone numbers? You know.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of phone numbers out there. They, you know, just because it comes from a particular phone number doesn't mean it's necessarily using that phone number too. Especially using something like WhatsApp, they could be using all kinds of different formats. They could be using 6-digit numbers. You don't know exactly how they're doing it.
No, it's not 6-digit. No, it's actually area code and phone number. So I know that some text messages come in as 3 digits, like 3-digit dash or 4-digit dash, you know. But these are actual phone numbers.
It doesn't mean they necessarily have those phone numbers. You can call them and find out, but I doubt they do.
I call them, but it says the person you're calling is not able to take calls right now or something, and please leave a message. They're like taking up all the phone numbers.
You know, here's what I think would be a good project, Rebel. I think finding out how these people operate. I mean, how do you get a job doing that in the first place? Sending out spam to people on text messages. I think you should pursue that. I think you should become our intrepid reporter who is going undercover and becoming one of these, and then you can report back and explain how they work.
No, it's AI doing it. It's not, you know.
Well, you have to find out if that's true. AI is getting, you know, blamed for a lot of things. And it's getting kind of pissed off that it's taking the blame for all this, and I don't think we want that.
Well, I mean, it would be a good panel or discussion at Hope that you know, about how these scams work and how, you know, what they do and their tactics. And,
well, yeah, AI is, there's a discount for AI if you're attending the conference, so yeah, that could work out.
Well, I'm going to be in, the Hope is 15th of August, or the middle of August, right?
It's the 15th, the 16th, and the 14th.
Okay, because I'm going to Italy and Switzerland and Italy in the end of July and the beginning of August. So I'm going to make sure that I come back for the Hope Conference.
Yes, if I don't see you there, I'll be disappointed.
Let's see what else. I'm trying to figure out the clipboard. Sometimes you copy things to clipboard by accident, and now I got to figure out how to get it out of clipboard. The Windows, which is somewhere.
Please don't involve us in your operating system issues.
And speaking of operating systems, another thing for Hope would be if somebody could bring like an old AS400 or one of those kind of IBM old IBM systems or Deck System, Digital Equipment Corporation.
Yeah, they could just throw that in a backpack and then bring it to the conference, I'm sure.
And set up a network, like 2 or 3 terminals, VT320 terminals.
Uh-huh.
So that, you know,
you should be telling them. You should be telling them you should tell them to train to bring that equipment because that's a heavy lift.
Yeah, it's literally a heavy lift.
Or coordinate some rigging, you know, or at least a team of people. You need some spotters and all kinds of.
Well, there's a helipad on the roof. We could just lower it there.
A pulley. Maybe 2 pulleys.
I'm going to tell everyone there's a helipad on the roof. It's sort of like an update to the swimming pool on the roof thing. I just want to see all these, like, you know, more well-to-do hackers show up with mainframes and say, wait, where do we land the thing? And then I'll say, no, it was all a joke, and everybody will have a good time.
I'm not talking about bringing a mainframe. I'm talking about a mini computer.
I know that, but some people have mainframes. Don't judge.
Where are you going to put the high floor and the special circuitry?
That's why it's funny, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, what else, Rebel? One more item, then we're going to move on.
Oh, let's see. I guess that's it.
Okay, then. Goodbye. Was that mean? I'm sorry. I'm feeling a bit punchy, but you know, you have to move fast when Rebel's involved, because he's clever. He'll figure out a way to be on the phone for another 20 minutes.
Yeah, and look, it's late where I am. I want to be able to at least get through, you know, one or two more phone calls.
Yeah, I'm thinking of you.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Yeah, got a journey tomorrow morning, and you know, all kinds of stuff.
How are you journeying, by the way?
Train, of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah, that's the best way. Very cool. Very cool. Yes, Gila, go ahead.
Our friend Lex says, wasn't there a Zeppelin hookup
on the New Yorker Hotel? I don't know. You tell me. Is that true? Someone look up where the Zeppelin hookups were in Manhattan. I found the grating where Marilyn Monroe's skirt like was blown up into the air. You know, that's a historical site in Manhattan.
For what it's worth, by the way, that happens if you're a skirt wearer. That happens all over Manhattan.
Right, but there was a particular one that happened to her, and it was filmed.
It happened to me today.
Yeah, but unless you had cameramen around you, and you know the whole there's a newsreel about it.
Coming back to my office from lunch and skirt and what, it was so a shitty day.
Were there construction people like cheering, holding sandwiches?
What is this?
Not that I heard. I went red in the face and I kind of blacked out for a second because I was still embarrassed.
Wow, we have fun. Yeah, but I would like to know where the hookups were. That's
for the record. If you
came out wrong, you know what I mean.
New Yorker Hotel Zeppelin hookup. You get information about a robbery of Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin got robbed.
Apparently, hang on.
I had nothing to do with that.
Was this a robbery of a Zeppelin, or did the band Led Zeppelin get robbed?
Okay, so here's what I'm learning. I would like it on the record that the first non-AI generated response on Google for New Yorker Hotel Zeppelin landing hookup is from Sniffies.
I don't know what Sniffies is. What's Sniffies?
Sniffies is a gay-oriented hookup app. And
wow.
So apparently the New Yorker Hotel, super hot cruising spot. So if that's something that would entice you to come to Hope, please feel free. Apparently, there was a Zeppelin dock on the Empire State, but there was not one at the New Yorker.
Yeah, because they got that big, you know, stick at the top of the Empire. What do they call that thing? Mast antenna?
I'm going to go stick.
How did people get down from there? They tied the Zeppelin carefully. Up there.
Very carefully.
What, they slide down the rope? I'm woefully ignorant on this. I really am.
It's a slide.
All right. Well, something happened on the roof of the New Yorker. I don't know what.
Talking of things that did or didn't happen, they had the event, the public event of Marilyn Monroe over that subway grate, and there were newsreels and photographers and media there, and it was all very exciting. But the footage they filmed was not the footage they ended up using in the film The Seven-Year Itch to do that famous scene. They had to go back to Los Angeles, build a fake subway grate, and film her over that one for the scene they used in the film. Just a bit of Hollywood illusion shattering for you all.
Well, thanks for shattering that illusion. That was something that was a prized memory of New York that didn't exist. All right. So phone number 802-321-4225. Phone lines are open, I believe. And we'll take the next phone call.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to call us toll-free, you can use a U.S. toll-free number 833-755-2600, which was arranged through a very generous friend of the show. Someone on the YouTube chat asks, where is Alex that is late at this hour? Someone didn't listen to our radio hour, it seems. But Alex, you want to refresh folks' memories of where you are?
Could have just said, we have to give the guy a lecture. That's fine.
That's it. Yeah. I am in Manchester in the United Kingdom, not Manchester, New Hampshire or Manchester, Vermont, but Manchester, England.
I don't think anybody would have thought of those other two Manchesters.
Hang on.
You don't think so?
Manchester, oh. People think UK. They don't think New Hampshire. They don't think Vermont. Did you say New Hampshire? I don't even know if I got the states right.
Yeah.
Manchester, New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Isn't that the airport? I flew into the airport there.
I don't know. There might be an airport there.
I would hope it would be the airport you flew into.
No, I was going to a wedding in Maine, and I flew into New Hampshire and rented a car and drove.
Why didn't you fly into Bangor?
Because it was less expensive and it's closer, because we were in in Nowheresville, Maine. Hmm. And yes. However, given how everyone responded when I sang last week, I would like everyone to thank me, because I have not sung the Manchester, England song from Hair, which has been stuck in my head since you told us where you were.
I thought you were going to sing the Manchester City chant for the football.
But Emmanuel.
I think it would blow out our equipment here, because it involves a lot of shouting.
Emmanuel, on what planet would you ever think that I would know the chant for either of the Manchester football?
The World Cup is coming here in just a few weeks, okay?
That if you're not going to a game, you're supposed to stay in your house.
Doing crazy things to people, so who knows what people know. People are paying millions of dollars for tickets. FIFA is corrupt as hell, and they need to be 86th as well.
Did you hear that the chair of Finland's football association has called for a full FIFA investigation?
I hope so.
The president.
Oh, into what? The fake trophy they gave Trump?
The fake trophy they gave Trump, and also apparently there are 4 points of malfeasance.
Only four?
So four so far.
Wow. Hey, why isn't the phone ringing? 802-321-4225. I hope the phone's not broken again.
Alex, if we have a little time to kill, the person who wasn't listening to the radio hour would like to know what's Manchester like versus London.
It's not that hard a question, Alex.
Yeah, I had to unmute myself there. Otherwise, nobody would hear me. I was being kind and making lots of noise over here while you guys were talking, so didn't want to interrupt. But Manchester, I think it's a great city. We talked about it a little bit on the radio portion of our programming here this evening. But yeah, a lot of fun, very quirky city. I think really fond of its quirkiness. I was at a couple different pubs tonight, in addition to, I think, one of the best Indian food places I've ever been, this place called Akbar's in Manchester. Unbelievably good Indian food up here. Very Southeast Asian, a lot of Southeast Asians here in Manchester as well, which I think explains the prevalence of Asian food and flavor here. But also a lot of history when it comes to computing and computation. And Alan Turing was up here. There is a memorial to Alan Turing. They have a statue of him sitting on a bench in a park holding an apple. And the apple both represents the Newton. Obviously, it's kind of a throwback to science and to Newton, as well as the Garden of Eden and temptation, the apple in his hand. And there is let me see if I can pull this up and read it to you guys, because I think it was particularly cool and very, I guess, I don't know what the right word is here, kind of forward-looking forward-looking is not the right word, but I think apologetic might be the right word. But there is a plaque underneath Alan Turing's feet on in front of this bench that says, Alan Matheson Turing, 1912 to 1954, father of computer science, mathematician, logician, wartime codebreaker, victim of prejudice, which I think is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Pretty neat to note that he is a victim of prejudice because he was openly gay at the time, and that was considered a crime in the United Kingdom to be gay. And it cost him his job in terms of working in code making and code breaking because he was gay and subject to what people believed then was made you susceptible to being blackmailed. And therefore, you were unfit to keep state secrets. So I think it was pretty neat to see that as part of that plaque and dedication to Alan Turing, recognition that he was a victim of prejudice.
And The Imitation Game is the film that documents that.
That's right.
Benedict Cumberbatch, who played Julian Assange in a different film. So it's, a lot of history, Hey, Alex, let me ask you a trivia question to prove you're in Manchester. What color are the buses?
The buses, geez. I think they're yellow.
Yeah, you're right. They are yellow. They're transitioning to yellow. Yep, not red like in London.
Yeah, that's right. I think they're yellow. And, you know, they have an interesting tram system that runs throughout the city, too. And it's a pretty big city. You know, it's not nearly as big as London, but it's got some really beautiful views and vistas. To me, Manchester, you know, is an industrial town, right? So it feels a bit like East London to me, East London being, you know, a lot more industrial than kind of the West End. So it kind of feels like a big East London to me.
Yeah, I like East London.
I like East London too, yeah. It also it kind of feels a little bit like the 90s here. Yeah, in a sense, like people are very individualistic and unique, and there is, you know, no kind of. I think people feel very free to be themselves here, I don't know. There's something about it. I feel like that harkens back to the 90s up here, and I like it.
You sure it's not Oasis?
No, I'm certain it's not Oasis. That, I think, was one of the low points of the 90s. I can't stand Oasis. I never could.
All right. I didn't mean to unleash all that hostility. But
yeah. I mean, almost as much as SNL. But, you know.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That was uncalled for.
There we go. Let's start it up now. Yep.
Okay.
SNL UK has been, like, killing it.
Oh, yeah. The UK version?
Wonderful.
I think it's better than the U.S. version. I really do. You know, really? What's amazing about that show, first of all, they can curse like we can here. But what they do, they have a lot more energy. Like, let's say, you know, the host is in a sketch, right? They're in this live sketch that takes place just like SNL. And then they have to go and, like, last week they had to introduce the Foo Fighters. So they don't have a commercial. They run from the stage. They were just in a sketch to where the band is, and they introduce the Foo Fighters.
And the camera follows them, yeah.
Yeah, or they run to where the closing is happening, where everybody's gathered on stage, and they have to do this without a break. They're still in costume. And they never do that in America. They always have a nice break where people are able to change and all that. So you feel like you're watching a real live show, even if you're watching it on tape.
Also, I feel like the Weekend Update segment on the UK one, like, they are so not pulling punches compared to even the current American Weekend Update.
Uh-huh. That's what I meant by...
They go right for it.
Yeah, they're brutal. Yeah. They are brutal as far as critiquing their leaders or celebrities. You know, 86 is nothing to them.
No, it's fantastic. Really enjoying it. And do you know who the host is this week?
I do not.
This week.
Amy Lou Wood.
Oh. Yeah, from White Lotus, Sex Education.
Was she a Barbie? I feel like she was a Barbie.
I don't know.
Was she a Barbie?
Strike three. Okay. I don't know any of the references, but that's fine. There's so many references these days. We have a phone call and a patient person hopefully on the phone. Good evening. You're on overtime.
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah, I just had a couple points. My first question is, do you have meetings in Florida, Miami? Like, meetings, do you know?
Do we have, Rob, can you look this up? Do we have Miami? I know we have Florida. We have a bunch in Florida. But I'm not sure exactly. I would think Miami should be there. We have somebody looking it up right now.
Okay.
Colorado, there's one in Boca, one in Jacksonville, and one in Orlando. My Florida geography is for shit, so I don't know how much that helps you, but currently we have one in Boca, okay. Jacksonville, and Orlando.
Are any of those near Miami?
Yeah, well, not too far. Yes, not too far.
Okay.
How can I see these? Is there a website or something where I can find out about this?
If there's a website, it's listed. Actually, you guys would know if you're looking at it right now.
So if you go to 2600.com/meetings, scroll down to the United States, scroll down to Florida. There does not appear to be any contact information for any of these three meetings.
But it tells you where they are.
It tells you where they are.
And so you know where to show up.
You know where and you know when.
Yeah.
Oh, so the address is there. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the default time is 5 o'clock on Fridays. Just look for people that, you know, look like hackers, I guess, or might have a copy of 2600 or some piece of equipment or something like that. It's also possible people don't show up that week. You know, it does happen sometimes. It's basically, you know, a place where people have been, where people say they are going to be. And, you know, it depends on how many people actually decide to do it that week.
Oh, and my other point is, I found out, I mean, Alex is in the UK, so, you know, I happen to run into this story today. In the UK, they have what they call a television license.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if Alex can speak on this. Like, this is a license where just owning a TV is, you have to have a, almost like a car, which I thought was crazy.
Well, it dates back. It dates back to before the internet, and they're actually these vans that would drive around. And they could detect the RF from TVs. And if they detected RF from a television in a house that wasn't paying a license, they'd pay a visit. And if there was a TV there, they would have to pay the fine and the licensing fee. But, you know, the positive part of that is that those license fees pay for the BBC. And the BBC provides so much to the people of the UK. You know, things that we can't even imagine. Programming with no commercials. Really good news coverage, all kinds of amazing programming, you know, like Monty Python and so much more than that. I don't know. I don't know how they're able to stretch the money so far, but they really have done incredible things with it.
I'm just surprised it still works today. I mean, this is like a very ancient system and it still applies today. You know, they're still doing it now.
That's kind of the theme of England, though. Ancient systems that still somehow work today. But Alex, let me let you speak on this.
Yeah, I mean, I believe you still need to have a television license. I'm not sure if it's still Ofcom that requires the licenses, or if it's somebody else that's dealing with the licenses now. But even when you use the BBC iPlayer app these days, it asks before it allows you to stream anything in, do you have a TV license? And if you answer no, you're not allowed to use the BBC app or the iPlayer. You have to answer yes, you have a license here. But, I mean, I don't live in the UK, so I don't have to have a license to use a television here. But when I did live in the UK, I did have to pay a television license for the TV that I had in my home. And I paid it. And
How much was it about?
I don't remember. It wasn't that much, but it wasn't... I remember it wasn't like extremely cheap either. I think it was something significant. I think it was like significant enough for people to decide not to pay it. I don't remember, but that was 10 years ago.
Like over $100 or?
I think so. I think it must have been. Yeah. Or I can't remember if it was amortized over months or something like that. But I mean, I can look it up and see what it is. But I don't recall off the top of my head. It was so long ago. But I remember paying it. And I think maybe it was the Ofcom vans that would drive around looking for the RF from televisions. I think that was it. Maybe that was the regulator, I think, that had to deal with this. But it is a crazy system that these televisions have to be registered and licensed.
Well, you know, totally. It's a crazy system. Go ahead.
I'm sure it would surprise a lot of Americans that such a thing exists.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, the crazy part for me is having a system where all the money can just be taken away from a public broadcaster like we saw. You know, that can't happen over there. At least I don't think it can happen over there. But who knows? Gila, you have something. Go ahead.
The cost for a yearly standard license went up on April 1st to £180 a year. But if you want to save a little money, you can get a black and white license.
A black and white license? You can do that?
$58.50.
Wait, you're telling me that... Somehow, wait, do they just send you a black and white signal, or do you have to buy a black and white TV? And how the hell do you do that?
So this information was provided to me by Tim in Connecticut. I will take a moment and look myself, but I just thought that was interesting and worth sharing.
I grew up with a black and white TV. I did.
Yeah. I believe I remember learning that the black and white license was basically for the longest time sort of an honor system thing, where you just admitted that you had a color television over a black and white one and paid a little more. But I don't know how they go around verifying that these days, because TV, especially in the analog era, it's a passive appliance. Like, there's no way for the people broadcasting the content to know who exactly is receiving it and where they are and what they're doing with it. It was all kind of just...
What about people who don't have a TV? They watch TV on their phones and computers. What about that?
That's actually causing a lot of trouble these days with the license fee in general, because a lot of people are thinking, well, yeah, I don't have what you would call a television anymore. Why should I pay a license fee? The license fee is something that a lot of people in the UK, there's always talk about, like, should we abolish it? And the BBC is like, but we, how would we function?
Yes.
So it's
a... But wait, there's more. In 2006, the Office for National Statistics, thank you, Wikipedia, changed the classification of the license fee from a service charge to a tax, because don't forget, UK TV is expanding, so people aren't just getting the BBC. They've got ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5, satellite, cable, whatever. Mm-hmm. This is, I guess, to help fund the infrastructure.
Well, you're saying the commercial stations also get a piece of the fee?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
And, wait, there's more. So there's a 50% discount on your license fee if you are legally blind.
So you're only getting the audio. Yeah.
Exactly. okay, so good Lord, one of the contractors is called Capita, and they're going to earn between 1.10 and 1.55 billion pounds over the life of its contract enforcing and administering the license fees. You get it. This is an annual thing. So it's like a license plate, but basically instead of for your car, it's for your TV. In June 29th.
I think 180 pounds a year is kind of a lot of money, though, I think, for the average person. That's 30 pounds a month, 30, 40. Isn't that like 20 pounds a month or something? I think that's a decent amount of money, I think.
It's $15 a month.
Yeah, that's expensive. It's like a insurance. Yeah.
Hey, they can walk into a hospital and not pay anything. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah, and a pound right now is about $1.35.
And there's a TV licensing savings card that you can, like, sock money away on. And it'll automatically roll over from year to year. Also, might I mention that I guess a TV licensing savings card is the equivalent of the FSA here in the United States? Hmm.
Wow. Well, thank you for bringing that up. That's a very interesting topic, obviously, and we'd love to know more about it.
Oh, and before I go, I wondered, on your show, did you say anything about the shooting at the White House? Did you have anything to say about that?
Well, we didn't address it directly, but we certainly talked about the aftermath, because that's the true threat to democracy. I mean, what would you like us to address as far as the incident itself?
Well, the fact that he wants to get Jimmy Kimmel canceled because of the jokes.
Yeah, no, we mentioned that. Yeah, that just shows you how dangerous he is. You know, that anything is going to be blamed that he feels is an enemy of him, and the fact that the FCC is moving so fast to take away licenses of ABC.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed the show. Thanks for taking my call.
All right. Thanks for calling. Take care.
Pursuant to the previous conversation, obviously there was also a parallel discussion going on in the chat, which I was looking at Wikipedia and not at the chat, so I missed Stan 1125, who said, I think this is in most of European countries. It definitely exists in Poland and Iceland. In Iceland, I'm paying around $200 per year. So you can't opt out in Iceland, even if you don't have radio or TV. And someone who's handle I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce. So you can apply for a TV license in the morning and cancel for a refund before midnight every day with automation, of course.
Huh. Well, Jay, so we might be the weird ones then. Maybe this is something that happens in more places than we thought.
I think that not having a TV license is sort of like Fahrenheit temperatures.
Yeah. But the other aspect to this is we know the threat that non-commercial broadcasting is under in this country. We're seeing, you know, all the hits to PBS just in the last year. Mm-hmm. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is no more. And, you know, we have to fight tooth and nail to keep WBAI on the air. And, you know, other similar entities are having the same problem. And just thinking that if there were some fee that, like, everybody in the country would pay as a small bit of tax, and that went to making sure the media landscape is not just filled with commercial interests that want to squeeze money out of you, maybe that's not such a bad idea.
Yeah.
This is absolutely fascinating. In terms of pieces that have been carved out for people in care homes and people who live in Crown dependencies. The Isle of Man Department of Social Care they're free on the Isle of Man. Because a free television license scheme was funded by the Isle of Man Department of Social Care.
Wait, so if you go to the Isle of Man, you don't have to pay a TV fee?
Yes.
Good to know. All right.
That does seem correct. Elderly people in the Channel Islands. This is absolutely fascinating. Okay. According to Section 363 of the Communications Act 2003, a television license must be obtained for any device that is installed or used for receiving a television program at the same time as it is received by members of the public. In 2016, the conditions under which a television license is required changed to include receiving video on demand program services on iPlayer.
Wow.
You don't have to have a television license for operating a digital box with a hi-fi system or another device that can be used only to produce sounds.
I like that they call it a hi-fi system.
To use it as a closed circuit monitor to only play DVDs or videos. But if you want to record live TV, you need a license. To use television as a digital radio receiver, to use a digital box to listen to radio through a TV, to use a television as a monitor for a computer or games console. Watching catch-up TV services when the program is not live, except when using BBC iPlayer services to receive BBC channel catch-up programs.
Interesting.
A free license is required for non-exempt premises, even when no fee is payable, e.g. premises with residents over 75.
We're going to give 2 more minutes to get another phone call, and if not, we're going to sign off for the night. 802-321-4225, 2 minutes. Gila, I have an assignment for you, if you choose to take it.
Sure.
Can you tell me how things work in the Falkland Islands, which I understand Trump wants to start a war there, too, to punish England. They literally wants to punish England for not supporting him enough.
For cheap purposes.
Yeah. Well, I just want to know, do they get their own channel? Do they get piggybacked onto BBC One? Do they have to pay a licensing fee? Things like that.
Falkland Islands Television, FITV, was founded in 2010.
Why did it take them so long to found a TV station?
I don't know.
Well, that's something that bothers me.
Okay, you can check them out at fitv.co. Do you know the TLD for the Falkland Islands?
It's probably .uk.
No, it's .fk, my friend.
Okay, wow. You could have some fun with that one, I think.
They made a documentary for the 40th anniversary of the Falklands War.
Wow. But he literally wants to punish England for not, joining in the war against Iran and saying, we're going to take Argentina's side. And I don't think anybody is in the mood for this. I don't think anybody on any side wants to, have that war again. But this is how he operates.
Wow. the chat's getting fun.
You realize no one listening or listening to the archives has any idea what's being said in the chat. I don't either because I don't look at the chat.
Okay, so a couple of our very astute listeners, shout out to Lex and to Tim, noticed that I dropped a quote from Susie Eddie Izzard's seminal special, Dress to Kill.
Again, I don't have any of the references. Wow, it's like I'm on a different planet.
Dress to Kill came out 26 years ago, I want to say. Hmm. I remember watching it on my 20th birthday. And it's so funny, so good. I have the whole thing memorized, and there's a whole part where she's talking about Britain an empire and collecting countries, and then the rest of the world said, Britain, what's that behind your back? Oh, it's India and a number of other countries. Go on, give them back. All right. Falkland Islands. We need the Falkland Islands for strategic sheep purposes.
Yes. Anyway, the work of Eddie Izzard is excellent.
Phone lines are now closed.
Okay. I will say this week, in addition to the 2600 meetings on Friday, those of us in the New York area, if you're interested, might want to go to the Museum of the Moving Image in Astoria, Queens, and check out a screening of the documentary about Joy Bubbles, a much missed member of the freak community. That screening is happening at the museum.
The PH freak community.
Yes, the PH freak community. go to movingimage.org and look up Saturday the 2nd on their calendar to find your way to this screening and get tickets. It's in one of their smaller screening rooms, so you might want to get your tickets sooner than later. I know I'm going. I have a couple other friends from the local area who are going, and it would be cool to see folks there.
Will you renew our membership while you're there, please?
Yes, I will.
Thank you.
But also the... This documentary has been in the works for a very long time. It was crowdfunded back in 2014. And it is finally a finished product and making the rounds of independent screenings and festivals and things. So this is a chance to check it out. It's not at every theater. So.
And it's screening at the museum as part of the Real Abilities Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Did you mention this?
Yes.
Because I mentioned this and I wasn't listening.
I did not mention that yet, but it's
Real Abilities Film Festival, REEL Abilities, which is a film festival focusing on people with disabilities. So as part of that screening, it's going to have open captions, open audio description. We saw a movie in the Real Abilities Film Festival last year.
Yes. Yes, that a friend of mine had directed.
That a friend of ours had directed, and it was about a young woman with synesthesia, mm-hmm. and how that, very cool.
Yeah. Good stuff to be had out there.
Yes. E, we have a question for you from the chat,
sure.
If we still have another moment. Has Emmanuel been to any remote countries like Falkland Islands or Pitcairn Islands?
Well, I wouldn't just limit it to islands as being remote. I've been to Albania, I've been to North Korea, I've been to Cuba. You know, they're not maybe remote for the people who live there or are near there, but they're different. You want remote island, St. Pierre off the coast of Canada, which is part of France. That's kind of remote. You know, you gotta drive a lot to get there, and then you have to take a boat. So, and then you're in Europe, you know, without flying.
Listener, I hope that answers your question.
Been to Mongolia. That's kind of remote.
We just ordered a new window fan. It came with a remote.
That is true.
Wait, how does that even... okay.
Remote. It's
remote, remote country. I get it. All right. That's funny.
It was a fun.
Punchy right now, Emmanuel.
Yeah.
Well, We are done. I just want to remind people, 2600 meetings this Friday. Look at 2600.com/meetings to see where one is close to you and how you might start one if there isn't one close to you. Tomorrow is the last day for early submissions for both talks and workshops at the HOPE Conference coming up August 14th through 16th. Go to hope.net for all the information on how you can submit your talk idea. We'll still be accepting talk ideas and workshop ideas after April 30th, but the ones that get submitted by April 30th are priority. We give them first crack. So again, hope.net is where you can find all that information. Also, tomorrow is the last day for your ticket purchase to benefit the Electronic Frontier Foundation. 10% of every ticket sale goes to the EFF. So if you buy your ticket by midnight tomorrow, you'll be able to help the EFF as well.
Excellent.
That's all.
Excellent.
All right. Well, good night, everybody.
Alex, you said you were going to leave early, and you're still here.
I did, and look at me. I know. It's 2:04 a.m. here. I'm ready for bed.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, let us sign off. We can have a few words with you privately. But
okay.
Any final words from anybody else to our listeners?
Once again, if you're interested in any of the activism type events and happenings going on the 1st of May, go to maydaystrong.org and find one near you.
And shut it down. Not the website. Shut down Well, figure out what you want to shut down. Shut that down. Gracefully, yeah. All right, we will see you next week. Oh, there won't be an overtime next week because we're doing the call-in show on the radio station. So, yeah, that'll be fun. So we'll see you here in 2 weeks.